News Podcast. This is episode 121. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on Anarchist News. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, go to the non-sectarian anarchistnews.org. Editorial, Flashing Pans. There are two notable threads of topics this week, one being the Hamilton Pride arrests and defenses, and the other being people's responses to the concentration camps of undocumented folks from the South. The Hamilton Pride story is fairly common fare for anarchists, a story of police perfidy, white supremacy, and harassment. It stands out mostly because of the coherency of the Hamilton writers in the face of a slightly more tangled web, and in defense of someone in prison, which has been known to make anarchists abandon principles, but doesn't here. The concentration camp thread is made in two stories, both encouraging action, one suggesting action of a more straightforward type, and the other explicitly promoting a sneakier route. While I absolutely do not condemn this tendency, I do ponder how folks are motivated to write these blog posts once the magical words concentration camps become accepted terminology for the situation. If we're looking at this with a hopeful eye, then we can focus on how language is powerful and still moves people. The more jaundiced lens notes whose language is attended to and the necessity of magic words, that is, words with huge cultural baggage, to get people to take stands. Maybe I should say hopeful lens and jaundiced eye. Metaphors are an endlessly entertaining game. Anyway, right now, concentration camps have people up in arms, if only figuratively. There is something to be said for flavors of the week, but I'm not exactly sure of what that something is. What's new this week? This is why you weren't invited. Hamilton police target queers fighting back. From Anon. Homophobes and white nationalists attack Hamilton Pride, are chased off by Pride folks and eventually by cops. Cops start harassing queers and anarchists and queer anarchists for the violence involved in defending themselves. Quote, Hamilton police are threatening and clearly trying to intimidate those who were attacked. They've banged on doors and windows, camped out on front porches, and even surrounded and trapped a person in their driveway as they attempted to leave their house. The police certainly are not on our side, and they are most definitely not out to protect us. We share this text so that others in the community can show their support and solidarity and put pressure on the police and city to drop this attempt at targeting brave people who stood up for all of us last weekend. Unquote. Sigh.
Hong Kong, anarchists and the resistance to the extradition bill from CrimeThink. This article interested me more than many, maybe mostly because I know so little about resistance in China or Hong Kong. Quote, whatever is going on, we can say that it emerges from within a field from which the visible, recognized protagonists of previous sequences, including political parties, student bodies, and right-wing and populist groups, have all been vanquished or discredited. It is a field populated with shadows, haunted by shades, echoes, and murmurs. As of now, center stage remains empty, unquote. This piece doesn't have the go-team rah-rah spirit of so many CrimeThink articles, while providing the background, voices on the ground, and context that continue to be interesting. So, thumbs up from me. Be warned, the formatting is confusing, with block quotes for the interviewer's questions and regular text for the responses. Now you know!
Solidarity Graffiti for Anarchist Prisoners by Eco-Anarchist Vandals, FAI/IRF, from June11.noblogs.org. Burger Off, McWork Prison, Animal Prison, Child Prison, Screws Work Here, were some of the tags against oppression in England. Quote, solidarity to Brian Valiancourt, who is serving on a 9-year sentence in the U.S. for an arson of a McDonald's, to the imprisoned comrades in Italy who are fighting from inside the cells on hunger strike, to the three comrades arrested for bank robbery in Thessalonica, Greece, to Lisa, held in Spain, for all the imprisoned anarchists around the world. Unquote. Also, holes cut in fences.
June 11th, LeMay vice president's car set on fire, from Montreal Counter-Info. One of a couple report backs from June 11th. Quote, on the day of solidarity with long-term anarchist prisoners, the BMW belonging to André Cardinal, parked in front of his private residence in NDG, was set on fire. André Cardinal is the vice president of LeMay, the architecture firm designing the migrant prison in Laval. "May fires burn for all the worlds prison and borders have stolen from us," unquote.
What are we going to do about these concentration camps? From Birds Before the Storm, quote, "It is completely possible for tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of us, to surround these camps and force them to release the detainees. It could work with fewer people than that, too, though I have a feeling there's an awful lot of anger, an awful lot of power waiting to be unleashed against the machinery of oppression right now," unquote. Magpie says it's time to do something. I guess because kids? Immigrants? Camps? As they themselves acknowledge, there are a million things to attend to, but this is the one that gets the rallying cry right now. Perhaps because they're burned out and are trying to encourage themselves. That's fair. What are blogs really for, anyway?
"How We Invaded Cuba," from freedomnews.org.uk by Donald Room. "Some anarchists occupied the Cuban embassy in London in July 1963. That's about it. Who's we again?"
"On Guilt and Innocence, a Response to Arrests Following Hamilton Pride," from Anon. Another story, they don't get less infuriating, of cops manipulating opinion, with the collusion of mainstream media, and, unfortunately, of allies who don't stop to get the correct story, which gets harder and harder, of course, as information comes at us with machine speed instead of human speed. Cops accuse Cedar of having broken parole to do a thing that no reasonable person thinks is wrong, that is, defending people from homophobic attacks, while the reality is that Cedar wasn't at Pride Day and is now in prison awaiting their hearing. Even though we all know that the state is far more pernicious both internally and externally than just the obviously brutal and malign police forces, it's hard not to focus on the cops as the face and hand of power. Quote, "Despite the fact that they weren't at Pride, Cedar could spend weeks in jail just waiting for a parole hearing in order to make their case. In order to speed this process and apply pressure on the Hamilton police, Cedar has begun a hunger strike. We don't have any other details as of now, but we know that since being arrested on Saturday morning, Cedar hasn't eaten anything. We need people to mobilize around this, to help spread the word, and to make sure Cedar's case doesn't get lost in the weekly news cycle," unquote.
"When the Bashed Bash Back," from Slate.com. "A mainstream media reflection on the bullshit of respectable memorials of insurrections and riots. The statue of Debord in France has something to say about this, among a million other examples of ideas and people who have been reified to mean something antithetical to what they said slash why they were significant. Anyway, the author appropriately takes Bash Back as a palliative to the whitewashing of Stonewall. Quote, Pride was not the only Bash Back target. Chapters attacked the homes of heterosexist murderers, organized dance parties in the streets, beautified cop cars with glitter and paint, engaged in public sex and orgies, glamdalized army recruiting centers, disrupted transphobic politicians' speeches, discussed theory, and wheat-pasted images of fisting onto bank windows. Mm-hmm. Dorothy told me that they trashed the ever-loving shit out of the Human Rights Campaign store on the anniversary of Stonewall in 2011. It was an everyday culture of attack, as a Bash Back essay put it. Much of what the group did never made it into mainstream publications, but some actions were covered locally," unquote. Notably, the former Bash Backer they speak to for the article talks about how the experience in the group was so helpful to their current Antifa organizing. There's a deeper message there, but I'll let my listeners ponder what that means for themselves.
"Day of Action, Drop All Charges Against Pride Defenders," from Anon. Quote, "Drop all charges against Pride defenders! Free Cedar now! We are calling for a day of autonomous action in support of those who are facing repression for defending themselves and others from far-right violence at Hamilton Pride. This Friday, June 28th, we are asking for people far and wide to show their support and solidarity by taking action where they live. Actions could include things like banner drops, postering, rallies, or any number of other more creative endeavors," winky face. "If possible, it would be great if you could share it with us by sending a photo and or a brief description to thetower@riseup.net. You could also post things yourself on northshore.info and send us the link. Please share widely," unquote. Obviously, you're hearing this too late for it to work as an announcement, but I hope to report on actions that happened next week.
Kingston Pride and Solidarity with Queers Against Police. First-person account of participation of a sort in the Kingston Pride Parade. Quote, "I'm so over Pride celebrations that are boring spectacles for the benefit of the rich and powerful. Yet this year I was uniquely dismayed to see a handful of racist and xenophobic People's Party of Canada stooges marching in Pride alongside the usual bullshit Children's Aid Society and RBC floats. Thanks to some queers who acted fast, their campaign materials were stolen and destroyed, limiting their ability to spread their white supremacist garbage to the crowd. Unquote. Also, fuck the police, as in all the police.
Return of the Pirates from Akephalos, which says about itself, quote, "This is the blog for a currently unformed print project, Akephalos, a journal of anarchy, ecstasy, and eros, working title. I didn't want the project to keep running ahead of me, so I threw out a snare and caught it by its ankle to at least show you part of the beast for now, even if it is merely its bloody ankle that I reveal. Akephalos is inspired by an earlier publication of the same name. Acephale was a public review created by Georges Bataille. It was also a separate secret society formed by Bataille and others." Unquote. Sounds cool, no? Anyway, this entry on this blog starts by talking about a chapter in the book The Many-Headed Hydra, Sailors, Slaves, Commoners, and the Hidden History of the Revolutionary Atlantic, but is mostly about how anarchists could be responding effectively to real-world events. Quote, "I prefer the pre-standardized spelling pirat, P-Y-R-A-T. It gives me a vision of rats sneaking in and out of buildings without being noticed, shitting in the gears of machines, pissing on computer circuits, gnawing at power cords, multiplying, carrying plague to civilization. Pirat also conjures up images of pyros setting fires for pleasure and revenge, wild-eyed demons sulking in the darkness, waiting to move, shadows moving and then bright red flames burst from nothing. Soon, a whole yard of vans and other vehicles are ablaze, the ice logos slowly melting and peeling off in the inferno. The next day, I awake to reports of similar fires and countless tire slashings of vehicles connected to concentration camps and prisons across the continent. There are even reports of armed battles carried out at the southern border of Mexico. An age of howls and fire to melt the ice." Unquote.
Italy. Updates on anarchist prisoners from anarchija.info. Updates on 8 anarchist prisoners in Italy, Natasia Savio, Giovanni Ghezzi, Pier Loreto Falenca, Alfredo Caspito, Stecco, Anna and Silvia, and Gespe. Some are on hunger strikes, others have been transferred to house arrest, and an announcement of a protest for June 23rd in front of the prison L'Aquila. Write an anarchist prisoner today.
Trial with the accused in Phoenix 2 from abcnews.noblogs.org. A single paragraph announcing the court dates of some anarchists in the Czech Republic and calling for people to attend those dates. Quote, "Any way of expressing support is welcomed." Unquote.
Anathema, Volume 5, Issue 3. Some fun bits on, for example, the shocking evidence that some police are racist and bigoted, a sinkhole in West Philly as a when nature attacks, and some more serious pieces like the issue around the A space and what language means, aka how jargon is changing and also getting more loaded, power plants, prisoner solidarity, and an ending sonnet. Always worthwhile. Well, maybe not the poetry part.
Antifascism as Weakness from M. Shimshon. This author coins the word oppressionism, which I can imagine being useful, and spoils the movie Chuds enough to make me a tiny bit interested in watching it. It also calls out some anarchists and anti-fascists for being stooges in a way that could be useful to people who are prone to populist activism. Maybe. Quote, "Anarchists adopted this new, not really, and exciting politic mainly because militancy reemerged on the scene in a way that was risky, but not really risky, which meant that our opportunity had come for publicity. The major reason why anarchists have become so entrenched in oppressionism and its liberal routes is partly because anarchists have made themselves into excellent pawns. Anarchists are okay with violence, breaking the law, and disobedience. The anarchist utopia and ethic is one of helping people out. The anarchist in our own imaginations is the protagonist and hero with all the spirit of self-sacrifice implied. This image of self-sacrifice is reinforced by a misrepresentation of the history of the American left. All of these combine to make anarchists excellent stooges in the larger social struggle milieu because they both strengthen the movement through intimidation and violence and legitimize the reformist nonviolent elements through comparison. Even when anarchists are self-conscious of all these flaws, oppressionism and privilege politics both make this sacrifice worth it because it helps out people who need help. But helping out people is not just what our politics is about. It is about a total break with the present order, not just the fascist order or just the racist order or against the way capitalism has organized our lives in their entirety." Unquote. It gets called out in the comments for being simplistic. That's fair too. It takes good fiction to do justice to this kind of layered complexity, I expect.
Sartre's Anarchist Philosophy from mainstream source IAI.tv, which has the tagline, quote, Changing How the World Thinks, an online magazine of big ideas, unquote. Anyway, an argument that the Marxists stole Sartre in arguing for a definition of anarchist society as peaceful, among other things. Quote, in place of a state, anarchism advocates peaceful coexistence based on social freedom and our capacity for mutual aid, cooperation, respect, and communal relations. Sartre agreed, arguing that only individuals are sovereign, but that humans are united to each other and the world around them through their interactions, particularly in the workspace. According to Sartre, work is an essential attitude of human reality, founded on a need to collaborate with others based on an agreed mutual dependence. As he pointed out, I have always been in agreement with anarchists, who are the only ones to have conceived of a whole man to develop through social action and whose chief characteristic is freedom, unquote. The only post on this thread accuses Sartre of authoritarian behavior, as if anarchists are only people who never fuck up or are abusive. A little unclear on the concept, I'd say, but what do I know? I expect this article would have been more interesting to anarchists if it were written for us. That is, there is an assumption that we care about connecting another famous dead white male to our pantheon, with no explanation about how this would change or validate anything about the way that anarchists currently think and behave. But I did mention this was from a mainstream source, so never mind.
Emma Goldman, one of history's best-known anarchists, was born 150 years ago. From a column called No Class on Labor History that is published in Teen Vogue, OMFG. This biography is not terrible, which only indicates that 150 years ago feels safe to the people who determine how long it takes for teeth to be blunted. The Frick assassination attempt is mentioned, but no bombs. Teen Vogue, people.
Pioneers of British Anarchism, Edward Carpenter, from freedomnews.org.uk. A fairly brief biography of this noted gay contemporary of William Morris on the history of Stonewall. Among many other essays, Carpenter wrote Civilization, Its Cause and Cure. I'm sure I'm alone in being startled and disoriented to find the title of an enemy combatant pamphlet in a story from Freedom News. Eek!
Audio and video. Audio Bakunin, Revolution's podcast on Mikhail Bakunin. Two episodes from Revolution's podcast, which says about itself, quote, weekly podcasting exploring great political revolutions, unquote, about 30 minutes each. Episode 10.5 focuses on the life and times of Mikhail Bakunin before his 1864 arrival in Italy. It follows him through various European travels, imprisonments, death sentences, exiles, and escapes, while also focusing on the network of radicals and theory he experienced during that time. Episode 10.6 focuses less on Bakunin's life and more on the development of his anarcho-collectivism, as well as some of his specific critiques of coercion, inheritance, and power. Overall, these episodes act as a somewhat enjoyable, condensed history and do make me more interested in learning about him, even if the host did the typical anarchism is in chaos routine. Ugh.
Anarchy Radio, an hour. John Hose. A quite lively episode, no thanks to Jay-Z, but to the bevy of trolls calling, including Alfredo from Occupied Southwest Distro, who calls in with another plug for their anarcho ice cream truck project and some delightful trolling of John. According to Occupied's Twitter, Jay-Z has in fact asked them to stop calling in. Oh, also Kevin Tucker called in to plug his stuff, and John talked about some stuff that is bad.
Bad news. June 2019, number 23. 23 minutes. Quote, Radio 98 FM in Athens, voices of subversive expression with a roundup of news and information of interest from Greece. Dissident Island Radio from London, UK, with a roundup of anarchist action and news. The Final Straw Radio from Southern Appalachia with an update about Nazi and police collaboration and harassment of anti-racists in the so-called U.S. South, unquote. The show starts out with the dissident news from London, which is entirely about labor struggles, and I didn't get much farther than that. I mean, cool.
Exploring Violence, Nonviolence, and Extinction Rebellion, where XR gets the research wrong. 51 Minutes, from Anarcho Writer's Blog by Andrew Flood. Andrew Flood finds the YouTube before some younger and hipper projects, so good for him. This is some history of protests in the context of what is violence, catalyzed by a research paper used by Extinction Rebellion. I cannot imagine a better use of Flood's time than refuting liberal bullshit from a liberal group. He doesn't have any annoying verbal tics, and his voice is perfectly pleasant. So good job all around.
That is way more sarcastic than I wanted it to be.
Did you read it?
I wrote it. What the fuck? Okay, all right, that's fine. Primal Anarchy Podcast 21, a message from the unsponsored. An hour. A typical episode of this podcast appears to be a shotgun blast of topics that interest Kevin Tucker for fans of Kevin Tucker. Kevin answers some questions submitted by fans, talks about the prospect of a primal anarchy primer, and explains the nuanced differences between anarcho-primitivism and primal anarchy. Quote, the AP critique was about asking questions. Now, with primal anarchy, we can say pretty definitively where things went wrong. Unquote. Namely, domestication, civilization, etc. Almost directly after this, KT strangely claimed that primal anarchy isn't looking for a, quote, original sin, unquote, but still seems pretty convinced that it's domestication. Also, in regard to human nature, quote, this innate primal anarchy, this innate egalitarianism is part of who we are as a wild animal. And, quote, we don't have to create something new, it's all within us, unquote. Groovy, man. KT also plays a portion of an interview with Patty Stonefish, who was involved with the documentary Arming Sisters, focusing on the effects of oil man camps on Native women and tribal legal rights. The podcast rounds out with Kevin's explanation of why Black and Green does so terribly financially, and the message from the unsponsored mostly seems to be, donate today.
Of the week, engagement. What have been the most effective ways that you have connected with or communicated with other anarchists, anarchist projects, and new ideas within the broader anarchist space? Once upon a time, it was correspondence, publications, and social events like book fairs and gatherings. While these things still happen, increasingly, it seems anarchists largely engage via the internet through sites like this one or IGD and podcasts that are often associated with those websites. It would be easy to bemoan the loss of face-to-face interaction and the intentionality of the published word to the either one-sided nature of many news sites, comments not allowed, or the cacophony of the troll army, but I am unconvinced that one form is better than the others. While some of this is about how we each individually absorb information best, I think there are also some particulars to anarchist ideas that influence what works and what doesn't, though I am unsure how to describe those particulars. So I guess additionally, what are challenges to engaging with new anarchists, projects, and ideas? Aragorn?
You know, when I think about my coming-of-age story, it doesn't look as direct as, seeing a flyer and attending an event or it was before the internet, so didn't involve the internet. What it really involved was trying to meet and interact with people who were involved with literature in one way or another, zines, bookshops, etc., and trying to talk to them about the ideas proper. When I really was coming of age, it was in the context of a group of people. I started as an employee at a university cafe called the Che Cafe in San Diego. And then my next stop was basically the scene in Sacramento, California, and particularly around this publication called Alphabet Threat, and getting to know the people who were involved in the project. There were a couple of bookstores that those people worked at in central Sacramento. And really starting those conversations and really starting thinking about how to spread that information in a DIY fashion. So I bought some wholesale stuff from one of the bookstores in Sacramento after having talked to one of the people who's involved. So I guess for me, it was about the real life, the real human interaction with somebody who was playing with these ideas, as part of their thing. Also, just paying a lot of attention to what Alphabet Threat was talking about. It was unlike a lot of publications that exist today in that it was really topical and it was really, it was funny. That's a big thing. I would say in terms of anarchist activity separate from that set of people, at some point in the mid-90s, I moved to the Bay Area and, you know, was just wanting to be involved in. And I would say the one thing that isn't sort of covered in this topic of the week that is worth really reflecting on and perhaps in some new ways is the social milieu. Like whether you're talking about book fairs or publishing or even, Antifa action type stuff. There is a social milieu that nowadays I think one has to sort of like decide whether or not one wants to get involved in. There are strong arguments, especially if you plan on being a by cloak of night person, to not be socially involved with all the people who are going to be the first ones on the police rolls. But there's also reasons to sort of eschew the social milieu in that the social milieu is probably not where anarchy is ever going to happen. Meaning that these are petty fiefdoms filled with people who are all about defending their turf. So there's lots to talk about here. This topic of the week almost doesn't give enough to talk about because it doesn't really use a lot of examples. So my own examples are sort of the publishing circle and then the milieu when I moved to the Bay Area. Your own thoughts?
There was definitely a hard cross between punk rock and anarchy for me at that age. And I discovered, one of the commenters talks about this, I discovered interesting people by going to talks and readings and discussions, some of which were either organized by anarchists or anarchists in nature, but many were not. Just an interesting book at City Lights or, just things that would be random in the world. But it was San Francisco in the 90s, and so there were interesting people kind of all over the place, it seemed like. But I got lucky because I found the anarchist reading group pretty quickly, within the first couple of years, I think. People who just wanted to talk about these ideas all the time. And so that helped a lot.
How do you differentiate between a group of people who wanted to talk about this stuff and the quote-unquote social milieu?
Well, the social milieu was a lot of punk rock, and most people didn't want to just talk about this stuff. They were just there for the music.
Vegan potlucks.
Or for the hanging out, or for the vegan potlucks.
Sure.
I feel like the people who were really interested were the people that you kind of plucked out of it. So they were exceptional. And now, I don't think that, I think you have the same problem about being social as you do as being on the internet. If you want your anarchy to be less than a public and for, general jurisdictional review. I think it's easier to find new projects and new anarchists now than it was back then. And obviously being older, I was always really insecure about not knowing enough and not being sure enough. And so being older helps with that.
Well, let's re-ask the question. What have been the most effective ways that you have connected with or communicated with other anarchists, anarchist projects, and new ideas within the broader anarchist space? And I think that the answer to that has to sort of be, I don't feel like there are particularly effective ways, but As always, I would start with like looking at a website.
Yeah.
Like the internet has sort of made the answer to that pretty simple.
Yeah.
Someone today asked the question whether or not anyone knew anything about what's called the AMW Americas or something. And it stands for like the abolitionist movement,
mm-hmm.
which of course we mostly know about because of the literature that has come out of the base in Brooklyn.
Oh, right.
They have a book there that they literally called the Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's sort of like they're trying to make a thing that now has a couple websites.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not exactly anarchist, but we do see where it sort of originates and where the politics sort of orients itself. And, you know, it's sort of like, it's sort of peak race, some anarchism, some autonomous stuff, some Marxist-like stuff.
Yeah.
But I would only know as much as I know because of the internet, because I don't know any of those people directly.
Right.
And, like, yeah, that's just what the world looks like
and
nowadays.
Somehow through travels, the book passed through.
The book has been around.
There's a copy of the book here. That's how I know. I read most of the book. But, yeah, the internet makes the world smaller and much, yeah, you know, I don't have to say that out loud. I feel like I don't know what to say. I guess I want better questions and I'm not in a headspace to come up with them on my own.
Well, you know, if you so desire, we did get a couple more pointed, hostile questions about last week's topic of the week.
Well, okay. What was last week's topic of the week?
It was on polyamory.
Oh, it was on polyamory.
And it was basically, they're both basically harshly asking me whether or not I thought, like, how could I possibly think that polyamory was, in their words, the way to have a more anarchistic relationship.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, of course, the reason why that was the case or why I made that argument last week or why I even wrote the topic of the week is because I myself have found polyamory to be my preferred way of doing relationships. And
sure.
And more pointedly, when I compare it to peak monogamy, peak singlehood or something, there's no doubt to me what my preference is if given those constraint of options.
Sure.
And if there were better options, I would love to see them.
Oh.
But I, in fact, don't see them. Yeah. Anyways, I basically got quite a bit of feedback that was more or less like, it's preposterous to call polyamory like a universal solvent, which, of course, I guess I pushed to the corner. I would say that it's just better than the other options.
Well, there's definitely a relationship between that topic of the week and this topic of the week.
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned it last time on the topic of the week that through relationships, you know, we have met other people who, you know, it wasn't necessarily in search of an anarchist. It was just, you know, someone was dating or the friends that they brought in. And there's even been situations where the person who you thought was your friend dates someone and the person you thought was your friend then disappears. But the person that they were dating is now in your circle and they're great. And you get, and so I've definitely, by vectors I could not have possibly predicted, gotten incredible people who, to some greater, lesser extent, are still in my life. So, I mean, I don't know if this is still true, but the divide of the bay itself, the divide between the San Francisco side and the East Bay side has always been really, really kind of hard.
It used to be a clear line. Now nobody lives in San Francisco at all.
Oh, right. So it's not a thing anymore.
It's not a thing
anymore. But relationships could always transcend that boundary.
It's true.
And so frequently the San Francisco people who were in my life because of some relationship connection.
Sure.
And there were interesting, great things going on in San Francisco. But when you eventually kind of nestled yourself in the East Bay after a couple of years, you'd lose track of those things. And
no, it's true.
So new projects, new people.
I don't even.
Yeah, I suppose nobody lives in San Francisco now, do they?
I barely go to San Francisco once a year now.
Yeah. I fly out of there sometimes.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
There's not really anything there anymore. So,
I mean, another way to frame this is how has urban life and sort of metropolitan living impacted the anarchist space? And I would say definitely the best places to be an anarchist in North America are not New York, Chicago, San Francisco, LA. No, no, no. The best places to be an anarchist in the U.S., in my opinion, are towns that are either smallish Midwestern college towns or towns that are the same size that are not necessarily college towns. You know, I think that the cost of living in the Midwest impacts how much free time you have, which
Absolutely.
Impacts how much
sure.
project stuff you can do in
and
your
impacts
life.
Impacts how much space you can have. And
yeah, for sure.
And that absolutely changes the way that you engage with the people around you.
With the only downside being that, you know, these smaller cities are likely to not have as many anarchists or they're harder to find.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think a similar argument can be made for, you know, rural anarchists. There are some somewhat, I mean, I guess you could say that they're small towns, but they feel much more like rural anarchist scenes dotted around. And they're pretty small, but it feels like that they have a lot of freedom and they're doing big, I don't know, big things, but you know.
I only really know of one that I would recommend. I would love to hear more East Coast and Midwest people mm-hmm. talk about what anarchist communities are happening in their area that are not urban metropolitan areas, because frankly, the word is not getting out.
Yeah, it's true. Use the internet. It's a thing. No, I'm
Thank
ridiculous
you.
Now.
Thank you very much for the conversation.
Thanks.
Never use the internet again. Ooh, never use the internet again. Come on. Never use the internet again. Ooh, never use the internet again.
I used to waste time scrolling through my Facebook wall. 20 minutes of my life I can never get back. A couple times a day before I knew I lost the hour. Productivity be far away like Okinawa. Facebook friends are not my real amigos. Checking for comments and shit, jacking off my ego. Anything to get a fucking like. One day I decided I should get a fucking life. Get it right.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week this podcast was edited by Lynn O'Mabel. What's New was written by Jackie and Dim, read by Chisel and Dim. The editorial this week was by Jackie. We thank Aragorn and Ariel for their help with the topic of the week, which was engagement. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackcart.com. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, see you at anarchistnews.org. And or the Anarchist News IRC chat room, linked on ANews, and perhaps at anarchy101.org.
Come on! Every day the bullshit worsens. Order a pizza like a fucking person. Match.com like an online pimp. Step to a girl in real life, you fucking wimp. Internet journalism is what you're gonna find. Everyone who can't get paid for it does it online. Most of the ones online is getting paid suck too. Fuck you! I swear I'm about to motherfucking lose it. YouTube has ads on all the best music. For all the worst music. YouTube awards, did you forget you can't have awards? You're the fucking internet. This shit is like a motherfucking club.